Welcome to the Polk Institute podcast. Yes, this is our first podcast for the Polk Institute. I'm your host, Michael Manahan, and today on our first podcast, I'm here joined by my co-founder of the Polk Institute, Professor Gary Polk. Gary, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great today, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. You know, I shouldn't have said, how are you doing this morning? Because somebody might be listening to our podcast in the afternoon or the evening or even the middle of the night. After all, I'm sure the content is so exciting, people will want to be listening any time of the day. But we happen to be recording this in the morning. And, you know, as it's our first time doing this, I'm sure we're going to have to work out some bugs. But there it is. It's the inaugural edition, if you will, the inaugural taping of the Polk Institute podcast. And what we're going to do today, Gary, I'd just like to spend some time talking about the Polk Institute and what we're trying to accomplish, how the whole thing came about, what people can expect out of it, and perhaps a little bit about how people might help us. So let's start off. Tell us, what exactly is the Polk Institute? What are you trying to accomplish?
Well, we want to be one of the positive things to come out of this pandemic called the COVID-19. So we have set up a nonprofit organization, and we're going to offer three phases. Our phase one will be a 40-week entrepreneurial education. Our phase two will be a six-month launch pad. And our phase three will be an access to capital phase.
Well, this sounds absolutely fantastic. And of course, I'm the co-founder, so I know what's going on, and it may seem a bit weird when I know everything that's going on that I'm sitting here asking you questions about it, because why would I be asking questions if I already know the answers? Well, of course, the purpose of doing this is for our audience, for our listeners. And while I know what's going on and you know what's going on, they don't. So we want to spread the word. We want everybody to understand what we're trying to do at the Polk Institute. So you mentioned that the first phase is an educational phase. So let's talk about what do our students learn during this first year?
Well, here's the idea. We're going to target Black and brown founders, and we want to teach them what they don't know about business. So we have 8 required courses, starting with Entrepreneurship for Everyone. Our second course will be Intro to Social Entrepreneurship, and our third course will be Mental Fitness for Entrepreneurs. The plan is to offer 1 class per month for 4 weeks, and we have a total of 8 required. Then we're going to give them the opportunity to have 2 elective classes. But the whole gist of what we're doing is providing a practitioner-driven education at a master's level in social entrepreneurship. So we will, at the end, issue a certificate of completion. And our aspirational goal, Mike, is to launch 1,000 social entrepreneurships over the next 10 years.
Oh, wow. That's, you know, I know when you and I first talked about launching 1,000 businesses, and you know, I've had feedback from people, and they said, wow, that's really ambitious, but I'm certainly confident that we can do it. And what about you, and what is your confidence level that we're going to be able to actually create and launch 1,000 new businesses over the next 10 years?
Well, that's a good question, and I think it starts with COVID-19 and the Zoom technology that's upon us now. With the Zoom technology, we can reach people in Atlanta. We can reach people in New York, Chicago, Seattle, Mexico, Canada, Europe. So we can really take this worldwide. So we're going to start with 1 cohort class of 25 founders. And we're going to run that, and we're going to learn some things. We're going to do some things right, and then we're going to do some things wrong and have to correct it. And then our second year, we plan to have 2 or 3 simultaneous cohort classes with 25 founders each. So year 2, we could be working with as many as 50 to 75 founders. And then the year after that, year 3 or 4, we see us having maybe 5 consecutive cohort classes going on at the same time. And that's how we know we can get to 1,000. So we're going to start small, take some baby steps, learn a lot, and then we're planning on expanding.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. So let's talk a little bit. You mentioned practitioners when you talked about what we would consider our professors, our educators, the people teaching our courses. Of course, you and I come from the academic world. We're both professors. I teach finance and accounting. You teach management. But some people listening may not understand the difference when we or what we're talking about when we say a practitioner. What do we mean when we say our courses are being taught by practitioners?
That's a great question. If we start on the academic side, typically a college professor has a PhD, they're tenured, and they've done a lot of research, but they may have not have any practical business experience. Whereas I have a master's degree, but instead of doing a lot of research, I've worked with real life CEOs in my Polk consultancy practice. And so I relate to real world activities as opposed to textbook or theories and concepts. So what our plan is to bring in people who have real jobs or have real companies, who have real life experience, and now want to teach what they've learned, firsthand experience, to our entrepreneurs who want to run a business. And so the difference is really practice-based, experience-based versus academic research-based. And that's probably the easiest way to say it. I've had a lot of people ask me, hey, Gary, can you give me a chance to work over at Dominguez Hills where you teach? I would love to teach as a part-time professor. And I remember my best professor, Loyola Marymount, when I was in undergrad, was a guy who was an adjunct professor, had a full-time ad agency job, but also taught. But he taught us real life as opposed to theory and concept. And that's really the big difference.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. And look, I'm a professor, you're a professor, and the last thing I want to do is talk disparagingly about our educational system, particularly at the higher levels of education. But I have noticed this, that there are some professors and colleagues and people I've met who, they've spent 30 years teaching, but they've never actually worked in a business one day in their life. They've never sat at a desk, taken phone calls from customers, hired and fired employees, and done all of the complex things that you actually have to do to manage a business. So the good thing about our program is it is going to be taught by people who've got real-world experience. No, they didn't read how to do this in a textbook, and they didn't write some fancy PhD dissertation about how it's supposed to be done. They've actually done it. They've actually rolled up their sleeves, ran businesses, ran marketing programs, ran logistics programs, produced products, and what have you. And we are really so lucky. The list of people that we've got who want to teach and want to be part of the program is really stellar. Let's talk a little bit about cost. Anytime you're talking about an educational program, particularly something that, you say it's master's level, and to me that means something. I've taught in the master's program at California State University, Dominguez Hills. I've got my own master's degree. I've done doctoral work. It's a higher level of education than an undergraduate degree, but I also think of master's degrees as, oh my God, that's going to kill your pocketbook. If you have to go and write a check to attend, even the cheapest university at the master's level, you're going to be spending a lot of money. So how do we handle the cost issue at the Polk Institute?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. Back in June, early July, I was doing some research one evening, and I was looking at U.S. News and World Report, and they do a lot of things about college rankings. And one thing that I stumbled across, an article that said there's currently a $1.6 trillion student debt. And I said, wow, that was amazing. I didn't realize it was that much. And then I did some more digging. I found out there are 15 universities in the United States that are tuition free. I did not know that. A little more dig, and I found of those 15, five are our military academies, including West Point, Naval Academy, Air Force Academy, Coast Guard Academy, and the Merchant Marine Academy. And they're all tuition-free, paid for by our government. And we know they're turning out great leaders. So I got to thinking, why couldn't we offer a tuition-free, master-level, certificated program in social entrepreneurship? Why couldn't we target black and brown entrepreneurs who normally don't have access to these kinds of resources? And instead of our graduates leaving us with a debt, they go through on a tuition-free basis. And the plan is to go out to individual donors, to our government, to the SBA, to foundations and other corporations and banks, and ask them to provide scholarship money for our students, because the last thing we want to do is put someone through the Polk Institute and have them ended up with a debt. Let's say USC, for example, is about $70,000 or $80,000 a year. So 80,000 times four, $320,000. And I know they go there for the networking, but you're not telling me that everyone who graduates from USC has a job, but they do have a huge debt.
Yeah.
Harvard, I think, is even more. And the real key is, what do they do with that debt? What do they do with that education? What we want to do is give them a practical education that they can actually launch a business debt-free.
Yeah, that is just
or
amazing.
Or tuition-free.
How did our system ever get to the stage where in order to get a higher education, you had to get, go into debt? I mean, I'm not talking about borrowing $10,000 or $15,000. You know, if it costs $20,000 to get a master's degree, I would say, well, you know, $20,000 to get a master's degree, your income's going to go up. It's probably worth it. But how did we ever get to the stage in this country where some of these universities can charge literally hundreds of thousands of dollars for a degree? It's shameful, and shame on the educational system for having developed that kind of a model. It seems to me we should be able to deliver quality education to the people who need it the most for a lot less money. But, you know, I'm not here to talk about what's wrong with our educational system. We're here to talk about what we're doing, and this is a great opportunity. We're going to provide what we call a master's level 1-year program of education, where you're going to take 10 courses from real world practitioners, people who've done it themselves. They're going to teach you how to do it, and you, the student, are going to pay zero because your scholarship is being paid for by contributions from corporate donors and foundations and what have you. And that just is really great. So, okay, Gary, we've recruited some students. We've taken them through the first year. They've taken their 10 courses. They've been done a good job on their academic side of their business. We give them some sort of a certificate and a graduation ceremony. But now the year is up. What happens next?
Well, to come in to the Polk Institute, we have a selection process where the candidate must submit a one-page business plan, a pitch deck, and give us a 5-minute marketing sales pitch of their plan. So once we accept them, the idea is that they take the courses and they start working on their full-blown business plan. So by the time they're done, they should have a full-blown business plan. Instead of having the traditional graduation with pop and circumstance, prompt and circumstances music playing, we're going to have a Founders Meet Funders demo day, how they do it in the entrepreneur world. And so we're going to have all of our graduates come up and do a 5 to 7 minute investor quality sales pitch. And hopefully we'll find some investors that says, tell me more. How can I invest in you? Then phase two is that we will bring some, if not all of our graduates into our accelerators, the PI accelerator, where we'll then assign them a mentor, and they will get 6 months working with the mentor to develop their founding team, to develop their website, develop a business model, how they make money, and most importantly, come up with how much money they need to operate their first year of operation. With that money or that amount established, now we're ready to introduce them to investors and angel investors who will be able to say, yes, I want to invest in you, and or no. We're also going to work with CDFIs, Community Development Financial Institutions, that will make loans to startups, and we hope that that will be that access to capital. One thing I've found in the 6 years of working in this entrepreneur space, investors, they want to be the first second. They don't want to be the first investor. They want to be the first second investor. So we hope to give them that bridge of being that first investor or helping them find that first investor. So then they can come in and get that first, second investor too, because we both know that you have to have capital to be successful when you're scaling a business.
So that just makes so much sense. It's not only, hey, we're going to train you, we're going to teach you, but then we're going to help you implement what we taught you in our training and in our educational program. It's almost like going and getting your, I don't know, your MBA, and then after you finish your MBA and you go off to work somewhere, people from the university are still coaching you and guiding you along in your career.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes just so much sense, and I love the idea. And so if I was a graduate of our program, I've come up with my business idea. I've got my business plan. I want to start implementing it. What kind of mentorship could I expect? What kind of help could I expect from the mentors in the program?
Well, that's a great question. When I ran the two incubators at Dominguez Hills and the South Bay Entrepreneurial Center, we would assign a mentor to act as an advisor, not a consultant who told them what to do, but an advisor who took the Socratic approach by asking questions. And so we don't do the work for them as a mentor, but we advise them. We're their champion. We're their maybe sometime tough love. But the real thing is putting together a program to launch. It's one thing to plan. It's another thing to implement. And we want savvy, experienced business people who can be their mentor and say, this is a good idea. Have you thought about that? That's a bad idea. But ultimately, we know that the CEO, they have to really make those decisions. So our real goal, Mike, is to create fundable CEOs, what I mean by that is they can articulate a vision, they can assemble a team, then they can go out and get resources. And that's what all the accelerated program is about, work with a mentor. So the mentor is going to give them 2 to 4 hours a month to work with them. We're also going to put together a CEO support group, where on a monthly basis, they'll meet together and they'll talk about problems and they'll work with each other to solve those problems. Because one thing we know that the CEO role is a very lonely role, but to have 25 like-minded people sitting in a room dealing with problems, that is a great help. There are no guarantees. They can do everything we tell them to do. They can still fail. We know that. But if they get the right help from a mentor and from their peers, we think their chance of success is much greater.
I just think this is so fabulous. You're probably familiar with an organization. I'm not going to give you their name, but there is an organization out there that puts together groups of CEOs, and the groups of a group of CEOs is led by a coordinator or a mentor or some kind.
Yeah, they're
of
called a chair. I know okay, exactly what you're talking about.
A chair,
and it's a similar concept.
Yeah, except I know some business owners who participate in those types of groups. They pay a lot of money to be part of one of those groups. So our students are not only getting a free education, but they are getting something that a lot of business owners pay for, this kind of collaborative peer group. They're getting that for free as well. So the value of what we're providing here is absolutely tremendous. And of course, the objective is not to hand out a bunch of stuff for free. The objective is to give these entrepreneurs a much greater chance of success. Because we all know, you look at the statistics, newly launched businesses have a very high failure rate. And part of the reason is because a lot of those business owners, entrepreneurs, don't know what they're doing. They make a lot of mistakes. And if you can train them and educate them and then provide them mentorship and a collaborative group in which to grow their businesses, we should significantly decrease the failure rate of these businesses. So hey, we're doing
exactly
a great thing. Yeah. Gary, okay, now let's talk about the third piece is access to capital. You know, one of the biggest challenges early stage companies have is getting money. I mean, it just, you watch old movies and the local business owner goes down to his bank and he sits across the desk from the banker and they know each other and, you know, they go out to dinner together and they're good friends and the guy wants some money for his business and the banker loans him some money. Do the banks even loan money to small businesses anymore?
Well, that's a great question. I'm a former banker and 10 years with B of A. And if you came in while I was a banker, I'd ask you how long you've been in business. And they said, I'm a startup. I said, great, good luck. I'll see you in 3 to 5 years because you have to have a track record. Because I knew as a banker, if that loan went bad, it would be an unjustified loan loss. because we don't make loans to startups. But what banks do have to do, they have something called CRA, Community Reinvestment Act. What most of the major banks do, they partner with what I referred to earlier, the CDFI, the Community Development Financial Institutions, and these banks literally give these other organizations, CDFI, like Pacific Coast Regional, Opportunity Fund, LISC, I can go on and on. There are many, many CDFIs out there that I'm aware of that network, and they have lower standards to be able to make loans to startups with the idea that once they are successful, maybe that company will remember, oh, this money was provided to the CDFI by Union Bank, by City National, by Wells Fargo, and maybe I want to put my banking business with them. So there is a network out there that is for startups. The other group you have is angel investors. The big organizations are called the Pasadena Angels, the Tech Coast Angels. There's an angel group called the Golden Seed that primarily focuses on women. There's a Harvard angel group. There are various angel groups out there, and then some individual angels, and that is another group that will lend to startups, and they understand that. If you ever watch the Shark Tank, the sharks, Mark Cuban and Mr. Wonderful and Kevin and Damon and Lori, they are super angels because an angel is investing their personal money, and a startup is ready for an angel and usually not ready for a venture capitalist. But that would be the next phase of funding. So usually a company will start off with their own personal savings, maybe retirement, maybe money from family and friends. But if they don't have any, then they got to go straight to the angels or to the CDFIs. And I just make that point because we're targeting underrepresented Black and brown founders because we know that they don't have access to capital like others do. So we need to be able to educate them on how to get that and develop the relationships it takes to get it, because on any level, when I was a banker, I want to know my customer. I want to know who I'm investing in or lending to, and the angels are the same way. They want to bet on the jockey. They don't want to bet on the horse. So it's about the person, about the CEO.
So one of our goals is to develop relationships with any funding source that would consider funding an early stage company, whether it be an angel investor, whether it be some private equity group. And there are other types of lenders that will look at early stage companies, such as factors and asset based lenders and so on. So our objective is to develop relationships with these money sources, is what I'm going to call them, money sources who will help the graduates of our program. And of course, I'd like to think that perhaps our graduates might be a little more attractive than other businesses out there, because the fact that our graduates have gone through the training program, then our educational program, then they've also gone through our mentorship program. And so now they're really prepared and they've got a lot of support. So if then we can at that last stage introduce them to capital, it should be a real big win-win. So Gary, we've got a little bit of time left here. I want to talk about two more things. The first thing I'd like to talk about is, you've mentioned, you know, Black and brown folks. I want you to talk a little bit about our target market for our students. And then I want to talk about, I guess, if people who are listening to this want to know what they could do, how they can get involved, what kind of people are we looking for, and how can people get involved and help the Polk Institute accomplish what we're trying to accomplish?
Okay, so great questions. Let me try to start with your first one. We decided that we want to work with underrepresented Black and brown as a target market. It's very important at this point to note that we're not going to be exclusive, and we will accept and bring in non-Black and brown founders. But what we do know, Mike, is that education is a big thing when it comes to where we end up in success. Opportunity, exposure is a big thing when it comes to success. So what we want to do is give underrepresented Black and brown founders the opportunity to get the education, to understand business. And you mentioned that access to capital. I've had many people come to me and say, Gary, I have a business idea. I need an investor. No, you don't. Do you know profit margin? Do you know burn rate? Do you know the difference between variable expense Do you know valuation? What's a fixed expense? And so they need to learn the finances, because as an ex-banker, I feel that the financial part is the most important part. So we really want to educate them in that area. And a lot of times, Black and Brown, they don't have family members who've been through business and understand margins and things like that. And that's what we want to teach them. And then we want to give them that access to capital. And we feel that that's very important, because what we really want to do, we want to help them withdraw from welfare. We don't want to give them fish. We want to teach them how to fish. We know that there's a high failure rate, because it's like baseball. Entrepreneurship is a beat up game. But why do you do it? Because you want to be financial free. You want to be able to maybe create a legacy for your family. And what we hope is that our people, our companies come out and create three generation legacy business owners, as opposed to three generation of welfare recipients. So that's something very important to me. I remember in the 60s when I was a kid and we started hearing about welfare, my mother said, we are not going to do welfare. If we can't work and make it, we don't need it. And now what we want to do with the Polk Institute is use capitalism as that vehicle to get out of welfare and really create something, because that's what America's about. Mike, you and I know that small business is the backbone to our economic system, because small business is the place where innovation happens, and small business employees, more employees than Fortune 500. But the other thing, oftentimes, the Black and Brown businesses that are out there wind up less than $1 million in sales. We want to teach them how to scale. And part of that is developing a team and understanding how to work with a group of people as opposed to being a lone ranger. So I think that's really, really important that we make that fact. My ideal class, we will have 25 founding members. I would love to see 10 Black founders, 10 Brown founders, and 5 non-Black and Brown founders. So we do want diversity, but we feel that business is the same for most people in Black and Brown. Things like culture differences and self-doubt does matter. So we do talk about that. We will talk about that. But beyond that, it's this business. And business is tough, and there are no guarantees. And this is the real thing that we want to teach them. So what we want, what we're looking for, is people coming in who are very serious. And we know one thing, passion is not enough. You can't say, I want to make a lot of money. That's not enough. You really have to have an idea that this is something, there's a problem, and here's a solution. And we want to work this. And we're going to use market research. And we're going to teach them how to do things that a lot of times they never dreamed of doing, using systems as opposed to relying on people on everything. You develop a system first and then plug in the people. So we have a lot of ideas and tools to help companies grow. Again, I got to keep saying, though, there are no guarantees. And so we're excited about this opportunity. And if we launch 1,000 and 700 fail, but 300 made it, then we've had a great day. We've had a great time, because now we have 300 businesses. What if they all hired 10 employees, 20 employees? You can do the math. Now we're really making a difference and an impact, and we're doing it the right way, because we're going to teach them also ethics and character matter, and that's where the social entrepreneurship comes in. People, planet, profit. That is really very important to us, that these entrepreneurs understand that it's not a zero-sum game. We do want to make a profit, absolutely. We're capitalists, but we also want to take care of our planet, and we also want to take care of the people, our customers, our employees, because they all matter.
Gary, that,
so that, that is the first part. What was that second part,
well,
Mike?
You know,
I went off on that first part
that's
me out with the second part.
No, you know what, Gary? I think we're going to leave the second part. We've come to pretty much closing in on our time limit. We wanted to keep this about 30 minutes for our listeners. You've done a great job today of explaining this. We're going to do more. We're going to have this podcast every week, and I hope to have you on. You're not going to be on every week. I'm going to have some of our students on. I'm going to have some of our mentors on, some of our professors on. We're going to hopefully not just talk about the Institute, but actually – produce content that is of value, not just to our students, but to any person who's involved in a business and who might want to listen and find out more about what we're doing and also find out more about how to run a business successfully. Again, this is the Polk Institute podcast. I'm your host, Michael Manahan. I'm on today with my co-founder of the Polk Institute, professor and good friend of mine, Gary Polk. Gary, thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you, Michael, for having us.